Hey Pod, we're back.
Finally. Yes, that was our bad. But welcome back to His Story Time. Story Time with a Historical Precedent. My name is Blake Anderson.
And my name is Catherine Escalante.
And per my mother's request, I will no longer be swearing in this podcast.
Yes.
But it's okay.
You've joined the non-explicit club.
Maybe we should say it's not explicit on Apple Podcasts anymore, but...
Yeah, I stopped swearing. You stopped swearing.
I feel like I may still drop the occasional odd pearl. I don't think I ever swore and it wasn't tasteful though. I wasn't like, let me just put an F-bomb here.
I can't really. The beginning pods were me just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just yelling a little bit.
Yeah, and by a little bit, we mean a lot.
Yes.
So, yeah.
It's all good though. It's closing out on Pride Month.
Mm-hmm.
So another special Pride episode here.
Yep, we've only put out two. We were supposed to put out 3 to 4, but then life got in the way.
Catherine became a First Amendment aficionado, and then I had to go to college. I didn't actually have to go to college, but I have to do all the paperwork for I am.
Right, and we were just on complete opposite schedules for a little bit. We were like, does this day work for you? No.
Does this day work for you? And you were like, no. It's okay though. We're fine. Here we are. This is currently we got up early so yes, we could we film did. This episode so we could give the fans and stands what they wanted.
Yes, I brought Blake coffee.
She did. I'm still in my pajamas also.
Yep, me too, honestly. I got up. I forgot my whole laptop at my house.
That's okay.
But you know what? We're here. We're ready and we're excited. Do you want to give a recap on what you've been up to?
Yeah. Also, just quick tangent, the power doing the podcast for Pride in my PJs.
Yes.
That was a lot of alliteration.
Yes.
But yeah, it's immaculate. And what I've been up to, working a lot. And
you have been working a lot.
That's a lot of the problem why we couldn't film the podcast. It's because it was just I worked 12 hours today. And then just getting ready for college, making friends.
Yes.
Signing infinite health forms. And yeah, graduating again.
Yes.
That's fun.
Your second graduation, your non-COVID one.
My non-COVID. Well, there might be some COVID, but it's whatever. Yeah. Now, Catherine, tell them about your...
My thing again?
I was going to say... Bad donkey, if you get the drift.
Oh, okay, I see. Well, it's been, 2 weeks since our last pod, a week and a half, something like that. Some stupid amount of time. And it's been a lot of the same, honestly, just, keeping the momentum of protesting and, organizing and stuff. People are growing bolder. The opposition is definitely growing bolder. At first, it was you'd get a couple, odd remarks or bad looks when you're standing on the street with the sign. Now they're just actively yelling and I'm like, oh my gosh, but I've gotten really used to people yelling at me right now, so it's been kind of good. We ended up doing some chalk art in our downtown area and I ended up printing pamphlets. My new thing is printing pamphlets also. And they literally said, why saying all lives matter is improper. And now those are currently sitting in my car in mass. And anytime I hear anybody say all lives matter, they just get a pamphlet. So, yeah, that's kind of a little bit of what I've been up to. It's been really fun, really good.
Yeah. And we've just been, fighting the power.
Vibing.
Yes, just absolutely vibing.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is where we're at. This is a Pride episode because it's Pride Month. And today I'm kind of doing something I debated about doing because mine's primarily conjecture, but at the same time,
it's kind of fun.
Yeah, and it's an interesting take. And then
it definitely is.
Catherine is popping off about a queen herself.
Yes. So interesting to learn about.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. Did you have the quote you wanted to share, Catherine?
Oh, yes. I literally forgot about the quote.
That's fine. It is what it is.
My quote today is from Sonia Sotomayor, who's a justice in the Supreme Court, a queen.
Love her.
And she says, quote, I strive never to forget the real-world consequences of my decisions on individuals, businesses, and government. Hmm. Yeah. I like this quote for a couple reasons. One, Sonia Sotomayor is a queen. Like, I love her. Like, when people say representation matters, and, like, it's such, like, a phrase, you know, that everybody says. But, like, representation matters. And then secondly, I feel like when we keep having these conversations about, like, civil rights and, you know, liberation movements and this and that, we have to not only, like, acknowledge and, you know, look at stuff like inherent biases and, you know, cultural things, but we need to look at the legislative side of things and make sure that our policies are not neutral, rather anti-racism. Anti all those bad things.
Yep. And we just have to stand her because she, so like, as far as like Pride Month goes too, in the past month we've had two very large landmark LGBTQ rights rulings, and she's been on the correct side of both of them. So we have to stand her. Also, she was on the correct side of Obergefell v. Hodges 6 years ago. So, or five years ago. Was it 2014?
It's
2015.
2015. Yeah. Remember that one.
I should know that. That's like
my culture. Yes, you should know that.
But yeah, so if you're ready for a little bit of a Pride celebration, get excited, grab your snacks, relax, and enjoy this episode of History Time. Okay, welcome back, and it's about to get very Pride Month-y in here, so yeah.
As it should.
As it should. So today, I'm going to be talking about something hopefully you don't know, or you can just get a little bit more educated on. I hate that I just said that. Yep. I hate it.
Today, it happened.
I'm talking about James Buchanan Jr., the 15th president of the United States, and this is a quote from the Wikipedia page. Because this is funny. They read this bit. Boy. it says, he is therefore consistently ranked by historians as one of the least effective presidents in history for his failure to mitigate the national disunity that led to the National Civil War.
Yes.
And I was just like, this Wikipedia like author just really just came for him.
I mean, is he wrong?
No.
Yeah, no. I remember, like, learning about that, like, weird period in which, like, we don't know who any of the presidents were because they were just, like, really meaningless.
It's like, blah, 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 Andrew Jackson, blah, 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 Lincoln.
Yeah, literally. And then
you're just like, skip. Makes sense.
Skip, like, a lot and then be like, oh, Teddy Roosevelt.
Skip a lot. Yeah.
Well, there's a couple more before.
I like Ulysses.
Like, yeah.
She's iffy. I like Ulysses. Yeah, it's whatever. And this is a man, okay?
A man.
His election, in my opinion, is based on the fact that he was a northerner who, like, was still, like, a Democrat and a supporter of slavery, therefore. He just thought it was essential. Yeah, yeah. He thought it was a necessary evil of society. And they called this boy a doughface, because that's that term.
Interesting.
Yeah, doughface is a northern man with southern principles, so he was just like, slavery's chill, it's whatever.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and which we're gonna talk about that later. We're gonna talk about, there's something I have to add to that.
Okay.
It also says he's a big states' rights advocate boy, you know.
I just roll my eyes?
She did just roll her eyes. I can't see it, but yeah. So he was just like that type.
Yeah.
He was the one who's like, he was a, like, he called himself a Jeffersonian Democrat. And I'm just like, I just called him up. This no swearing thing is really getting to me. But it's beside the point. He started off as a lawyer. He was in the state House of Representatives in Pennsylvania, where he's from. And then he was like, switched his like vibe so that he could align with Andrew Jackson's Democratic Party.
Oh my god. Because
Jacksonian democracy just like, which it also, it appeals to this guy. Can we talk about, he says Jeffersonian democracy. This is it, sir. I am the common man and this is my era.
Oh my god.
He's really out here, huh?
Yeah. And then he's this minister to Russia. And this is a fun... I read this and I was like, oh, I love this. I have many tabs open. But it's... I read that he was like... I can't find where I found it. But he was like a minister to Russia during the Tsar Nicholas Alexander. Oh. And there's this like a story where he like kisses the Tsarina's hand. And that, like, he courted her or something.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, oh.
Ew. James.
I know. And I was like, I can't believe this. Okay, hold up. It's right here.
Imagine having the Tsar's daughter be your cover.
No, it's the Tsarina, his wife.
Oh.
Yeah, and this is the Tsar that I, like, really.
That's even more spicy. Wait, that, wow.
Yeah, it's. Jeez. No, yeah. No, he's my, like, see, this is why my, like, Russian history is my favorite. Stuff is always going down. Or there's always, like, some.
Even now, Russia is, like, interesting. Like, oof.
Yeah. Or, oh, excuse me. So that's not Buchanan. Buchanan did not kiss her hand. That is this other dude who we're going to talk about. And this is a great time to introduce him with that story. His name... William Rufus Devane King, or Colonel King, as he was often addressed.
Mm.
So, King is from the South. King is this Southern boy who's also involved in politics and thing. He's from North Carolina, and he ends up in Selma, Alabama, where he, like, has his political career. He serves as the secretary to the American mission to Russia in 1817. This is again the rumor. He falls in love with the Princess Charlotte of Prussia, and that's the one who's supposed to marry the Tsar. And so then he, like, kisses her hand, and which is like, I wouldn't mess with a Russian Tsar. No, I don't know about any of y'all.
I would not.
I wouldn't.
I'd be a little scared.
Yeah.
I kind of like my head, but yeah.
But it was fine. I think it says there's even a kind note delivered the next day that says it's fine. But the story then, historians kind of, in my opinion, this doesn't seem real. This bit, it says that, like, William Rufus Devane King was so infatuated with the Princess Charlotte of Prussia,
mm-hmm,
that he had a quote-unquote wayward heart that would never love again. But I don't, they're just like, oh, he was so heartbroken from this princess that he kissed a hand of one time. And I'm like,
I don't know about it.
So yeah, that is William Rufus Devane King. But that, now you're probably asking, what do these two have in common? Well, did you know that they're involved in, like, America's first, like, gay sex scandal?
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, this is where I'm gonna do a little tie into today. You see, like, when Stephen Colbert had Pete Buttigieg on his show, he said, mm-hmm, if elected, you would be the first openly gay president of the United States. But here we must entertain the conjecture that James Buchanan is the first closeted gay man of the United States. A lot of historians like to believe that tale that he and William Rufus Devane King, I have to look at his name every time I say it because I'm like, that's such a long name, I always forget it.
Yeah.
They entertain the idea that they were, in fact, lovers. So, despite the fact that I don't really vibe with either of their, like, political views at the time, right, and historians right. don't either, considering this man really was about to get, like, the Civil War going.
Right.
Like, yeah, that's beside the point. So, it's also worth noting, Buchanan met a woman earlier on in his life, too, in 1818. He began courting Anne Caroline Coleman at a grand ball, and she's the daughter of a wealthy iron tycoon, and Robert Coleman, I feel like I know that name, actually.
Goals.
And she's the sister-in-law of Philadelphia judge Joseph Hemphill, who's one of Buchanan's colleagues. So, and then a year later, in 1819, they get engaged, they spend a little time together, and Buchanan's busy with his law firm, and then the Panic of 1819 happens,
mm-hmm,
and he's taken away from his fiancée for, like, weeks, months at a time.
Oh.
And then...
Oh, James. Oh,
Anne. And then there's the rumor that he's just, like, in it for the money and the power. Because he has, like, all these, like, contacts. He's like, I can network with this. Especially... Mm-hmm. And, okay, this is my conjecture. This is not historically based. This is what I think I would like to have happen. This is a difference. I would like to think that, like, he had known maybe he didn't fancy women that way. And he's just like, okay, who do I marry? And he's just like, oh, this person is wealthy and has all these connections for me. She's daughter of an iron tycoon. Mm-hmm. Like, I want to marry the daughter of an iron tycoon. Who wouldn't? Right. And
I want to be the daughter of an oil tycoon.
Oh, so. An iron tycoon.
Oh, iron. Yeah,
iron. And so then... And that he was involved with other unidentified women. So there are rumors of him cheating. That is confirmed. He could be a Viking. But all again, we don't know. And the term bi didn't exist because this is an interesting fact. The term homosexual didn't exist until the later 19th century. Like at this time, the term homosexuality was coined in the late 19th century by Austrian-born Hungarian psychologist Karoly Maria Benkert.
Interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah. I saw some, I have seen different things, though. I saw one place say it was, like, in 1892, and another place said it was in 1868.
Hmm.
But...
Around the time.
Around the time, yeah. So that's beside the point. And then, here's the funny thing. So Coleman breaks off the engagement, and then later in 1819, she mysteriously dies.
Mysteriously dies? Okay.
Yeah.
Well... True crime. This just turned into a true crime
podcast. And then you want to hear this thing I love? Buchanan writes her dad a letter and he's like, can I come to the funeral of my ex-fiance? And the dad says no.
As he should.
Wealthy iron manufacturer and tycoon Robert Coleman's like, boy, no.
Get out.
So yeah.
If my parents don't do that, I mean, I hope that doesn't happen. I don't mysteriously die after I break up with my fiance, but like, they should say no.
Yeah. And so after this, it said Buchanan, again, never courts another woman. He has a quote, and it's, I feel happiness has fled from me forever.
Oh.
Yeah. So now
they were so existential
back in the 1800s. Yeah, and we have two.
That's a Gen Z-er.
We have William Rufus Devane King, who's like, oh, that Prussian princess I'll never love again. And then we have... Then we have Buchanan, who's like, yeah, I'm never going to love again. So here we have these two dudes.
Who are never loving a woman again. Who are like,
oh, I'll never love a woman again. And during his presidency now, so we're skipping forward a little bit. Buchanan adopts his orphan niece, Harriet Lane. And she becomes a White House hostess.
Mm.
And so she acts as the first lady. Because if you're taught anything about James Buchanan, other than the fact that he was a bad president.
Yeah.
It's that he was our only bachelor president.
Oh, yes.
Which is a fun way for people to have conjecture about his sexuality. Because there's like, why not? So his adopted niece is like the acting first lady.
Oh, that's kind of interesting. How old is she?
That's a really great question. She... I can click on it really quick. She was born in 1830, died in 1903. So she was like 26-ish by the time she was the acting first lady.
Mm.
So, oh my gosh, I'm sorry. So the conjecture over Anne's death too, we're going to keep going with that. It calls into question his sexuality. People are like, maybe not. Several writers have surmised that he was homosexual. But one of his biographers, Jean Baker, suggests that Buchanan was celibate, if not asexual. Like, he just wasn't. But I was like, again, these terms didn't exist. You couldn't quantify them.
Right.
So yeah. Now here's where things get spicy. Buchanan had a close relationship with William Rufus King. And this becomes a popular target of gossip. Yes. Because William Rufus Devane King is also now his roommate.
Oh my gosh. I love how history books just like...
They're like, they were roommates.
Yeah.
They both took care of his...
Child, niece, almost.
Of his adopted niece, yeah. And they're just it's fine.
They were roommates. Have you seen that fine?
They were roommates, yeah. So, Buchanan King lived together in a Washington boarding house and attended social functions together from 1834 until 1844.
What? They were clearly together.
And, it says, but here it says that that was, common for, guys to just, live together.
Oh.
And King once referred to the relationship as a communion.
Communion.
And then our favorite president, Andrew Jackson, calls King Miss Nancy. And prominent Democrat Aaron V. Brown referred to King as Buchanan's better half, wife, and Aunt Fancy.
Okay, well, do we need any more, adjectives to describe the relationship?
I don't think we quite do, but I just find this. I find it funny that Andrew Jackson was homophobic. Because I needed more reasons to dislike him. And going on. Later in life, he's given this, Buchanan's written this letter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that he would have married a woman, but he had a lack of ardent or romantic affection for a woman. So, that's another thing where people are like, okay, but he kind of said it. So then that's where the argument we have there. So he's like, he's asexual. He's celibate. He doesn't. Right. But people are just like, it's just with a woman. He lived with this man for a decade. And then there's something. And then Katherine Thompson, who's a wife of one of his cabinet members, says there's something unhealthy in the president's attitude. And here's a kind of sad thing. So King, he dies of tuberculosis shortly into his boyfriend's administration. Or Pierce's inauguration, excuse me. Wow, I read that wrong. So he dies 4 years before Buchanan becomes president.
Oh, that's so sad. That was the same thing with Alan Turing. His first love died of tuberculosis.
Yeah. I just got tested for tuberculosis. I don't have tuberculosis. Thank but God. It was fun
That'd
to get
be
tested.
Really awkward if, I know. Was like, guess what? I have tuberculosis.
I have tuberculosis. Yeah.
I'd be like, wow, thanks for telling me.
I had West Nile when I was 6 months old, and somehow I lived. It's amazing.
Yes.
King dies 4 years before Buchanan takes the office, and Buchanan is seen describing King as among the best, the purest, and the most consistent public men I have known. So, yeah.
We love a consistent public man.
We love a consistent public man. So, yeah. Now I'm going to get into a little bit of, a gospel-y, preachy kind of deal about what we talked about. So, yeah. This says here, that I'm reading the articles I used today, obviously Wikipedia because I'm basic, Time, the Washington Post, the Smithsonian, and the Stanford Encyclopedia of Philosophy. Those are what I'm using today. And the Washington Post has this great thing about how we really distort Buchanan's livelihood. And, there's just not enough that we talk about with them because
yeah.
We just say that, we just say, oh, they were roommates, you know?
Right, that's literally it.
Yeah. So, it's also worth noting the Washington Post has this that in 1844, King moved to Paris to be an ambassador, and Buchanan wrote a letter to a friend complaining about being alone and not finding the right gentleman partner.
Okay, what else do we need?
The quote, I'll read you the quote.
Do we need?
I am now solitary and alone, having no companion in the house with me. I've gone a-wooing to several gentlemen, but have not succeeded with any of one of them. I feel that it is not good for man to be alone, and should not be astonished to find myself married to some old maid who can nurse me when I am sick, provide good dinners for me when I am well, and not expect from me any very ardent or romantic affection. So I said that quote earlier, but that's the long version. That has so many homosexual undertones.
So many. What? I don't understand how anybody could, be like, no, he was just, they were roommates. They were just roommates.
Uh-huh. And then the Washington Post's next sentence goes, maybe he was only looking for a roommate, but who woos a roommate?
Exactly. Like,
and who like vocally denounces any romantic affection with a woman? Like, is like romantic affection bad? Yeah. So
I'll tell you who.
Anyways, so here we have another quote, and this is King writing to Buchanan from Paris. He says, "I am selfish enough to hope you will not be able to procure an associate who will cause you to feel no regret at our separation. For myself, I shall feel lonely in the midst of Paris, for here I shall have no friend with whom I shall commune as with my own thoughts." So he vocally says, "Don't replace me, and I am alone with my thoughts. This is bad." So either they were just, like, really good friends, or...
A little bit more.
Amen.
A little bit more.
Yeah. So, again, Andrew Jackson's...
Oh, Andrew Jackson.
I hate him. I'm trying so hard not to swear, Catherine, but this episode has Andrew Jackson in it.
I think it's so funny we both just have the biggest distaste for Andrew Jackson.
I got him impeached in school.
Anyone. Cannot relate.
Yeah, I'm so sorry. We were talking about that the other day. So, yeah. Now is my topicality thing. We've talked about pride. This is, like, again, just a fun little U.S. history thing you didn't know. But there's one thing I do want to talk about in here, because it's an interesting argument we're making today with being Pride Month. So, the Dred Scott case was decided in 1858.
Mm-hmm.
And James Buchanan was in office from March 4th, 1857 to March 4th, 1861. So the Dred Scott case happened during his administration. Ugh. And he supported the Supreme Court's decision for the Dred Scott case, which basically was like, you're not a person, you're a slave. Because let's talk about the facts. Do you know the facts about the Dred Scott case? Where he's like... So Dred Scott and his wife lived in Illinois and Wisconsin territory for 4 years where slavery is illegal.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't slave states. I believe he goes back to Missouri. He has temporary residence outside Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's considered a slave again. He's back into slavery. So then, again, Supreme Court case. And It's basically just like, yeah, slaves aren't people. They don't have the rights. And this is something that James Buchanan is, like, a supporter of. He's like, yeah, that's he's a vocal supporter of it. It denies the slaves' petition for freedom. Mm. And he was really instrumental in, like, admitting Kansas to the Union as a slave state. He was very, very vocal about, like, his pro-slavery. Like, he didn't, like, obviously no one's, like, pro-slavery, but you're pro its impact. And that's an argument I think people need to see today, too. A lot of times, like, people being, like, rioters are pro-arson. No one's pro-arson unless you're, like, an arsonist. That's not what they're there for, though. But I just think it's ironic how a president who might belong to, like, a minority, like the LGBTQ community, is saying that, like, this other minority, like, requires the oppression that he proffers.
I think it's just...
And this is where this is where I'm telling you to pop off. So, this is, like, the thing, too, where it's, like, you can't celebrate pride if you don't support Black Lives Matter.
Yeah. I think it was just a stupid lack of self-introspection of, like, he wasn't... If we believe the conjecture that he was, in fact, homosexual, then he was clearly didn't have the self-introspection to, like, be like, okay, well, you know, I'm part of this community in which, like, you know.
And again, like,
socially accepted.
Again, like, I did read in here somewhere that, like, being gay wasn't a thing. Like, we didn't know what that was. Yeah. We weren't, like.
But there would still be, like. Like, lack of social acceptance for it.
Yeah,
because it's so out of the norm, right?
Yeah.
And you would think he would apply some of the empathy and probably, like, bad feelings with
you know, being socially ostracized to that situation, but he just lacks that and just says, nope, sorry, you're not a person, or you're not as valuable as another person, or, you know, this and that. And I feel like that's a lot of the disconnection that still happens today, where it's like, people can deny others' experiences because they're not their own, or maybe they are their own, but not to that point. Like, when we talk about racism, another really important part of that is the conversation about colorism within, like, already minority groups. For example, like, Hispanic groups, because of colonization and because of, like, how hierarchies, like, formed in Latin America, a lot of, like, darker-skinned Latin Americans are, like, veneered as, like, less than, like, lighter-skinned American, like, Latin Americans. That's still, like, a thing today, and it's still a conversation that is, like, less talked about than racism. And it's almost like that because you're part of the minority group and you know the oppression that's, like, associated, but you still, like, act on your privilege in the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what James did.
Another thing I'm just going to bring up here, there's also conjecture that Abraham Lincoln was a homosexual.
Are you serious?
I don't know if you've heard this. Girl, yeah. The New York Times, this is where I'm taking this from, it's that a lot of people will cite his troubled marriage to Mary Todd Lincoln and his youthful friendship with Joshua Speed. He shared a bed with Joshua Speed for four years.
Oh my gosh. What?
And, which is, again, like, same situation with Buchanan. Wasn't
they
the
were
most,
roommates.
They were roommates, but they weren't the most, like, or well, that wasn't the most, like, out there, you know?
Right.
Like, people would do that. In a new book, it also states, though, that Lincoln had a homosexual relationship with the captain of his bodyguards, David V. Derrickson, who shared his bed whenever Mary Todd was away. And then in this book entitled The Intimate World of Abraham Lincoln, author C.A. Tripp, who's a psychologist, influential gay writer, and former sex researcher for Dr. Alfred C. Kinsey, he tries to resolve the issue forever, and he says that he is, in fact, a gay man, that America's greatest president, quote-unquote, the beacon of the Republican Party, was a gay man.
Mm.
So, we can conject... Is that a word? Can I say that?
We can
play this game all day, too, with, like, the homosexual scandals, but I think it's interesting. I just think it is interesting.
It is very, very interesting.
So, we went from one potentially gay president who said slaves aren't really people to one gay president who, like, said, let's win a war and along the way free some slaves.
Yep.
So, yeah. That's your gay history for today.
History time.
Yes. Okay. So hopefully that was a little bit jovial, a lot more upbeat and kind of saucy than some of the stories we tell. But now come back for Catherine. We're going to bow down to a queen, okay?
Yes,
so you have to take a break. Feel free to do that and join us back here. Thanks.
Okay, buckle up, ladies and gentlemen. We are ready to talk about this amazing person.
Okay, side note, we're also outside right now. We've always wanted to film an episode outside, and so we're sitting in a local park. And it's a little uncomfortable, but it's so beautiful out right now.
I kind of feel like I'm in a simulation. I will not lie. Like, if I try and touch anything, I will fail at it. Like,
yeah. Okay. Anyways, sorry.
Anyhow, so today, this Pride Month episode is dedicated to Miss Marsha P. Johnson.
Ooh.
If you're not aware of who she was, I wasn't either until Blake educated me, and we talked about her a little bit during our emergency pod, but, you know, we're really going to delve into her life and what she did now. So, Marsha P. Johnson was an activist, self-identified drag queen, performer, and survivor. This beautiful person was a pioneer of many of the movements and causes that we are still furthering today.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I didn't even know, like, a lot of the stuff that we still see today was, like, still fought against,
mm-hmm.
you know, so long ago, decades ago. But, you know, we don't really get taught about that much.
Yep.
So, Marsha was at the center of the New York City gay liberation movement for nearly 25 years. She fought on the front lines of protests against oppressive policing, spaces for transgender and homeless youth, and it advocated for sex workers, prisoners, and people with HIV/AIDS. Now, like, when we talk about this, I think we need to, like, take a second and, like, understand the magnitude of, like, what Marsha really did and how, like, we're still seeing the effects of that today. Like, when we talk about, like, her consistently going against oppressive policing, like, was in regards to, like, the Stonewall riots and, like, you know, if you look at the Black Lives Matter movement today, we see a lot of, like, the same fervor and, like, some of the same, like, you know, cause. Mm-hmm. And I think that's beautiful.
Some things never change.
Yes, but, you know, that's not gonna stop us from trying.
Nope.
Okay, so let's start from the very beginning. That is her life. So Johnson was born Malcolm Michaels Jr. on August 24th, 1945 in Elizabeth, New Jersey. She was the fifth of seven children in a working class family. Her father, Malcolm Michaels Sr., worked on the assembly line at a General Motors factory in Linden. Her mother, the former Alberta Clybourne, was a housekeeper. Her childhood was definitely tough. Marsha noted in an interview that she had been sexually assaulted at 13. Marsha eventually, though, graduated from Thomas A. Edison High School in 1963 and promptly moved to New York City with, quote, $15 and a bag of clothes. Unquote.
that's like my dream right now.
Yeah, just $15 and a bag of clothes, that's all you need. So I think let's take a moment quick to put her story into more like historical context, if that makes sense.
Amen.
It was not an easy time to live outside of the sexual mainstream, especially when Marsha was growing up. Yeah, that wasn't really the norm. I mean, it's still not as accepted in today's society as it Mm-mm. should be.
Especially as a feminine black figure.
Oh yeah, for sure.
The disadvantage and the disadvantage of the like oppression.
Yes, yes.
It's prevalent.
Yeah, and like at this time, New York State downgraded sodomy from like a felony to a misdemeanor, which that changed in 1950. But the persecution of gay people and criminalization of their activities was still super common, and like when. Looking back at like oppressive policing, that's kind of where like that comes in, where we have like unjust laws and then unjust execution of the enforcement of the laws comes in. So you know, it's quite a layered struggle, I would say. You know, you still had things like same-sex dancing in public was prohibited. The state liquor authority banned bars from serving gay people alcoholic beverages. People could be charged with sexual deviancy for cross-dressing. Police enforcement again was like often so arbitrary and like stupid. So you know, not good. Not having a good time. I hate it here. So,
imagine hating it here. Yeah. I do. I know I do.
I can't imagine it. I'm living it. So this leads us to one of the most notable instances of her life and her story, which is
Stonewall. Yes. Which I watched this really interesting video the other week, and it was like the Stonewall, you know, as a myth, and it was like a correction of like all these like things.
I would love to watch that.
It was so good. It was like the biggest thing I took away from it though was that like people like really just love to like hype up Stonewall. They're just like, hell yeah, Stonewall. But in reality, Stonewall was like described to the people who knew it well as like a dump. Oh. Like people were like, it was just like this shanty little like hole in the wall place where you could get watered down liquor, and it was like all this. But like, yeah, it was the center for like the LGBT community.
Dive bar.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Not
she
sorry,
swore. Oh well, it's fine. We have won this episode. And yeah.
I swear I'm swearing less in my everyday life. If you're keeping up with like my journey that is stopping swearing, it's tough. But I'm
it's here. Going, it's going. Okay, come on.
Anyhow, so yeah, Johnson was a key figure in the disturbances that followed the police raid at the Stonewall Inn, a gay bar, clearly, on Christopher Street. Early in the morning of June 28th, 1969, many legends have grown around this event. I mean, like Blake said, like it's literally sensationalized.
And these people are still alive too.
Yeah. I feel like when we think about history, we think about it as, like, this faraway thing. But, like, history is yesterday. History was made yesterday, trust me.
Or, like, in the grand scheme of things, people are like, oh, ancient Rome. And I'm like,
that was yesterday.
Ancient, like, if you think, yeah. Or, and the other thing too is, like, ancient Rome, before Rome fell in the, like, 400s, Rome had been around for longer than the United States has.
Yeah. And genuinely like, of the belief that, like, we totally underestimate the time frame of, like, our Earth. Like, I don't buy it's only been around for this set amount of time. I literally think, that's another thing. That's conspiracy.
Yeah.
Okay, take a shot every single time. Catherine says, anyhow. Me trying to find my place in my things. Okay, yeah. So Stonewall is often characterized as a riot, but more recently described as a rebellion or an uprising, which I just like a lot more. Those adjectives are just...
I do too.
...better. Evidence suggests that Johnson was among the vanguard of those who resisted the police, according to David Carter, the author of Stonewall, the riots that sparked the Gay Revolution. Marsha was 23 at the time. So young. So young. Marsha was quoted saying, quote, we were throwing over cars and screaming in the middle of the street because we were so upset because they closed that place. We were just saying, no more police brutality. We have had enough of police harassment in the village and in other places. Can I get an amen?
Let's get an amen up in here.
So, yeah. And also, I didn't know this, but I'm so uneducated. I'm so sorry.
But here's the thing, though. Just saying that makes you better than most people who live in their, like, ignorance.
Yeah.
Two things. There's no one so hard to teach as the child who knows everything. That's a Mary Poppins quote.
That's, like, your favorite
quote. That is my favorite quote. Because the thing is, like, if you don't know something, don't pretend like you do. You know?
Like, literally, do not pretend like you do. That's, like, one of my biggest pet peeves. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just the worst.
And the second thing is that the people who often pretend like they know everything are often the same type of person, if you know what I mean. They're all, like, you can close your eyes, imagine someone who thinks they know everything. A lot, more often than not, we're all picturing the same type, like, the same person.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. My person's wearing a baseball hat. I don't know why.
Oh, word. Okay, queen.
Nothing against baseball.
So, this is what I didn't know. The first anniversary, wow, the accent came out.
Anniversary.
The first anniversary of the protest prompted the first gay pride parade in 1970.
Ooh.
I was like, are you, what? I didn't know this. In 1980, which was a pivotal year for Marsha Johnson, she was invited to ride in the lead car of New York's annual gay pride parade and began living at the home of a close friend and another activist, Randy Wicker, in New Jersey. She cared for Wicker's lover, David Combs, before he died of AIDS in 1990. Grieving for her friend, she could sometimes be found... Hold on. I didn't read that part.
Oh.
Sorry, I, like, pasted, like, a part from an article. I just, like, didn't read it.
Wow.
Wow.
The more you know. I think we should just, like, start there.
Yeah, we're... okay, so, yeah. David Combs died of AIDS, and that prompted her to become an AIDS activist, attending protests by and meetings of ACT UP, the AIDS advocacy organization. Guys, I'm struggling. So, basically, a good person. In June 26th of 1992... Johnson said she had been HIV positive for 2 years. Quote, they call me a legend in my own time because there were so many queens gone that I'm one of the few queens left from the 70s and the 80s, she said. And, you know, I think this is a good time to insert the fact that we ignored a whole epidemic thing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that wasn't good. That wasn't good. If you know anything about that, which I will admit, I'm quite ignorant on it. No, like, I don't know the... You know, details. There's
the famous picture of the leather jacket, and on the back of it says, if I die, you know, like, someone, I'm gonna butcher the quote, but it's something to the extent of, like, if I die, just drop my body on the steps of the FDA.
Yep. Yeah.
Because who cares about minorities affected by disease?
Oh, yeah, wow, who does?
And the proportionality of those affected, like, if it's not, the majority will still survive, so who cares?
Right. That's literally, like, the mindset that we still see right now in, like, 2020 with the whole global pandemic that is consistently being marginalized, and, like, ugh, that's a whole nother thing. There's so many things. Like, again, history repeats. Like, if you don't believe me, look at the AIDS epidemic, which was literally ignored by federal authorities. Mm-hmm. And look at the COVID-19 epidemic that's...
Amen.
...being ignored by the federal authorities. So, anyhow, several days later, she was seen for the last time. This was after the interview in June 26th, 1992. So, on July 6th, 1992, her body was pulled from the Hudson River near Christopher Street Piers. Her death was quickly ruled a suicide, a determination that many of her friends and acquaintances questioned. Later in 1992, the authorities reclassified the case to drowning from an undetermined cause. And in 2012, they agreed to take a fresh look at the case, which officially remains open. That's a lot to unpack, because there's been a lot of changes, a lot of updates with Marsha's case, and, you know, there was a clear and blatant, ignoring of, like, what could have happened to her, because, you know, picking and choosing, and, you know, we don't vibe with that. But her legacy is definitely one of wonder, one of hope. And I can only hope that wherever the queen herself, Marsha Johnson, is now, she knows that her life, her story, and her advocacy has transcended the barrier of time. And I think when we talk about her legacy, I think it's really important also to talk about, like, how we see it manifested today in our world. So I want to touch a little bit on that. So the newly launched Marsha P. Johnson Institute will continue some of the work that Johnson started, advocating for the organizing on behalf of the transgender community. The Institute's founder and executive director was quoted saying that he will, you know, continue her work and continue a lot of the advocacy that she, you know, pioneered. Johnson has been the subject of several film projects, including work by Raina Gosset and Sasha Wurtzel, and many documentaries by Michael Cassino, and in 2017 by David France. You know, a lot of these films focus on her as a transgender activist and volunteer for the New York City Anti-Violence Project. So a part of all of this is kind of like how the conversations that she started and really pioneered have come all the way to a head in 2020. And I think that Marsha was really the start of a revolution. And when the history books are writing about it in decades and decades from now, I hope that Marsha is a notable name, because in my book, she's one of the people that, like, started, like, everything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as a person of color, as someone that wasn't, you know, it's like hyping me up.
I'm just hyping her up.
As a person of color, as someone that didn't conform to, like, gender stereotypes of her time, you know.
We were just talking about her quinceañera.
Oh.
When people were, like, telling her what a quince should be, and, like,
oh, yeah.
She should be this, like, princess and all
yeah.
this stuff.
Yeah, like, for sure. Like, people.
This dainty lady.
People have these, like, stereotypes for other people all the time. And, you know, Marsha, like, had her stereotypes, but she, you know, rose above. And she, you know, did great things. And her life has been mischaracterized all the time by people that didn't agree with her, quote, lifestyle, unquote. But, you know, I'll say it if no one won't. That's BS. Yeah. That's what I said.
Amen.
Amen.
We stand you, Marsha P. Johnson.
We stand Marsha P. Johnson.
As, like, a POC and a LGBT pod.
Oh, yeah.
We have to thank our queen.
It was a bug.
Yeah. This is not a perk of recording outside. Yeah, maybe we should stick to recording inside.
I don't like it.
That's okay.
I'm comfortable now.
Well, on that note, we're gonna go back inside where we belong. So thank you for tuning into this episode of History Time. Tune in next time for a very exciting episode that I've yet to tell Catherine about, but I'm personally excited for. So yeah, have a great rest of your day, and thank you for tuning into this Out of Pride episode of History Time. Goodbye. All
right, peace.